that which
tu
but
kamo
ipsuna,
kamo
by one with desires for fruitive results,
karma
work
sa
ahankarena,
with ego,
va
or
punaha
again
kriyate
is performed,
bohulayasham
with
great labor,
thought
that
rajasham
in the mode of passion,
udarhitam
is said to be. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. But action performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called action in the mode of passion. Now, this verse doesn't have a purport, so I will go over to the next one. I'll read the verse and then translation, and then read the purport. Text 25.
Anubandhaṃ kṣayaṃ hiṃsāṃ anapekṣā ca paurusham mahādārabhate karma jattattāmaśamuccate.
Their action performed in illusion, in disregard of scriptural injunction, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One has to give account of one's actions to the state or to the agents of the Supreme Lord, called Jamadutas. Irresponsible work is destructive because it destroys the regulative principles of scriptural injunctions. It is often based on violence and is distressing to other living entities. Such irresponsible work is carried out in the light of one's personal experience. This is called illusion, and all such illusory work is a product of the mode of ignorance. So, in these two verses that we just discussed, and the verse from yesterday, explained how different actions are performed in three different modes of the nature. The mode of goodness, mode of passion, and mode of ignorance. Mode of goodness, actions in the mode of goodness has been described as that action which is regulated and which is performed without attachment, without love or hatred, and without desire for fruitive results, is said to be in the mode of goodness. So when one acts, first of all, regulated, meaning it is performed with the or according to the scriptural injunction. When one acts according to the scriptural injunction, and then that action also is without any attachment and without the duality of love or hatred. Without love or hatred and without any desire for fruitive results, that action is called the action in the mode of goodness. The actions performed with great effort by one seeking to gratify his desires and enacted from a sense of false ego is called in the mode of passion. when one acts very laboriously to satisfy his desires and with a sense of false ego, that action is called action in the mode of passion. And when one acts in illusion, in disregard to scriptural injunctions, and without concern for future bondage or for violence or distress caused to others, is said the action in the mode of ignorance. So different individuals can act according to these three modes of the material nature. Actually, as we act, all our actions are specified in different modes of the nature. Now, we may act consciously or unconsciously, but if we do, then they will fall in three different categories. Like, we can act, say now we are members of ISKCON, we lead our life according to the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada's instructions are not some whimsical instructions. Srila Prabhupada instructed according to the scriptures. So when we act in this way, then our action becomes regulated. Even from a normal perspective, we can see that the devotees get up at certain times. Generally, the devotees get up before 3:30 in the morning. And then as soon as they get up, they take their bath, then they get ready for Mangala Arati. And then after Mangala Arati, they chant their rounds, then they attend the Bhagavatam class, then they take morning prasad. This way you can see that the life of a devotee is very much regulated, and this regulation is organized, arranged according to the scriptural injunctions. Those regulations are not done whimsically. Then the devotees act without any attachment. Devotees are taught not to act with attachment. Attachment for fruitive results. Attachment for self-aggrandizement or benefit or distinction, adoration and profit. And then in this way the devotee's activities are without any attachment and without love or hatred. Devotees, they just act according to the instructions of the authority or according to the instruction of the spiritual master. Without any specific consideration whether he likes to do it or not, he does it. Because the spiritual master said, spiritual master asked him to do it. And in this way the devotee's activities are free from fruitive results, desire for any benefit out of them, for personal gratification. So those activities are in the mode of goodness. So in one word we can say that the devotees, if they follow the regulations that Srila Prabhupada has given, if a devotee follows the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, then he will naturally become situated in the mode of goodness. In this way, whatever he does will be the action in the mode of goodness. A devotees are not inactive, they are always very active. Now, whatever a devotee does, whether he is aware of it or not, is performed in the mode of goodness. And what happens when one acts in the mode of goodness? Urdhang gacchanti sattvastha. A person who acts in the mode of goodness, sattva-gun, urdhaṁ gacchanti, he goes upwards. A person who acts in the mode of goodness, he will be elevated to the higher platform. So in this way, we can see that just by joining this movement, International Society for Krishna Consciousness, and acting according to Srila Prabhupada's instruction, we are actually building our future, which will be very beneficial for us, because we will be elevated to a higher platform. Now, then, some other people, they don't actually act like the devotees. Their life is not so regulated. And the motivation of their existence is, or motivation of their actions are to enjoy this material nature. And whatever they do it with a sense of false ego. That I am the doer, I am doing it, and therefore he becomes very eager, very keen to get the results of his action. So that kind of action, which is performed being motivated by the false ego, and which is very hard work, very laborious. And what is the purpose of the action? The purpose of the action is just to enjoy this material. So those actions are in the mode of passion. And some other people, they act in total disregard to the scriptures. They don't care what the scriptures say. And the way they act is always very violent and cause distress to others. And those activities, and then he does not care for the consequence of his actions. He doesn't care about the consequences. He doesn't care what's going to happen to him as a result of that action. And that is in the mode of ignorance. Now, due to the activities in the mode of goodness, one is elevated to the higher regions of this universe. Due to the actions in the mode of passion, one remains in the middle part of the of this universe. And when one acts in ignorance, then he slides down to the lower region of this universe. Now, when one goes higher up, he becomes free from material distress. Higher he goes, more free he becomes from material distress. And when one acts in the mode of passion, then he, for the time being, he may have some sort of sense of some illusory enjoyment. But that enjoyment doesn't last for very long. And mode of passion naturally causes one to slide down to the mode of ignorance. One cannot permanently stay in the mode of passion all the time. Mode of passion will slide down to the mode of ignorance, or cause one to slide down to the mode of ignorance. For example, one works very hard during the day. When one works hard, that is done in the mode of passion. Hard labor, the very active physical intense physical activities are performed in the mode of passion. And he works very hard during the day, with a desire to enjoy this material nature, with a desire to gratify his senses. But then he becomes tired and falls asleep. So from passion, he goes to ignorance. When one falls asleep, that is ignorance. Then he gets up in the morning. And again he starts to work hard. So from passion he went to ignorance, then from ignorance he came back to passion again. Then again at the end of the day, he becomes tired and he falls asleep. Then he gets up in the morning, works hard. So this way, he simply rotates in between mode of passion and ignorance. Passion to ignorance and ignorance to passion. Again, passion to ignorance and ignorance to passion. So in this way, dhamayan sarva bhutani jantra ruhani maya. Living entities are traveling in different types of jantras, different types of vehicles, of bodies. These bodies are actually different types of vehicles for the spirit soul to travel in this material nature, to undergo different types of suffering and misery. Jantra Rudhani. Krishna put the living entities in these jantras of this material body, the machines. And the living entities are acting, and as a result of his activities, he gets the reaction. Now, passion and ignorance simply rotate between each other. But a man who wants to derive the maximum benefit out of his human form of life, he must learn how to become situated in the mode of goodness. Because unless and until one is in the mode of goodness, one cannot make spiritual progress. One cannot make spiritual advancement. So, in this way, Krishna gave so many valuable instructions in Bhagavad Gita. And if we just follow Bhagavad Gita, our life becomes so easy. And we naturally make spiritual advancement, and as a result of that, we become naturally very joyful. When one leads his life according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, his life becomes very, very blissful. In India, not only the saintly people, but practically every cultured and educated person in the past used to follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, used to follow Bhagavad Gita. The kings used to lead their lives according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. That reminds me, when Jamunacharya became a king, and when he became a king, he actually naturally became very entangled with all kinds of managerial responsibilities. But Jamunacharya's grandfather, who was a great devotee, just before leaving his body, instructed one of his disciples to rescue Jamunacharya, to bring him back to Krishna consciousness. So this disciple of Jamunacharya's grandfather went to Jamunacharya, and he saw that Jamunacharya was so much involved in the management, and so many people are waiting to see him. He felt that he could not discuss properly with Jamunacharya about the instructions of his grandfather. So then he tricked Jamunacharya. That's a long story, maybe some other day I'll tell you. But to cut it short, he tricked Jamunacharya and allured him to come with him. He told Jamunacharya that his grandfather left a enormous treasure for him. And he entrusted the treasure with him, and he asked him to hand it over to Jamunacharya. So now he came to Jamunacharya to hand over that enormous wealth. So then Jamunacharya agreed to go with him And he made a condition that Jamanachari will have to come alone. He should not bring any of his men and the soldiers. So an associate. So he asked Jamanacharya to come with him. And throughout the day they traveled, and then in the evening they took a bath in a river and they sat down. And this saintly person, the disciple of Jamanacharya's grandfather, he started to recite the verses from Bhagavad Gita in the evening, in the very solid, very quiet atmosphere on the bank of a river, when they were sitting down after arduous day's journey, but after taking the bath and being in such an environment, both of them were feeling very relaxed. At that time, when he started to recite the verses from Bhagavad Gita, then Jamanacharya became completely taken over. He became extremely moved, and he remembered for so many years he didn't have the time or opportunity to read Bhagavad Gita. And he went to that saintly person and asked him to explain the instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. That became their practice every evening. They used to travel through the day, and in the evening they used to stop in the bank of a river where they would take bath, and then this saintly personality would instruct Jamanacharya on Srimad Bhagavad Gita. And in this way, within a few days' time, Jamanacharya became completely detached from his material attachment. He decided to give up his kingdom. He decided to give up everything and go back to spiritual life. Actually, Jamanacharya became a king at the age of 8. He became a king, but before that, he was in the Guru's ashram, in the Gurukul, and he was studying different Vedic literatures, and he became an exponent. Actually, at the age of 8, Jamanacharya was so brilliant that he defeated the most renowned scholar of that time. Jamanacharya defeated him, and as a result of that, the king offered half of his kingdom to Jamanacharya. And Jamanacharya, in this way, became a king. But after so many years, when he heard this saintly personality explaining from Bhagavad Gita, his heart was completely transformed. And he detached himself from everything, and he decided to become a devotee again. And this Jamanacharya was the person who re-established Krishna consciousness at a time when Krishna consciousness was almost lost. Due to Shankaracharya's Shuddha Dvaitavad, Shuddha Advaitavad, pure monism, this Krishna consciousness was practically finished. But Jamanacharya, he started the work of re-establishing Krishna consciousness. And then Ramanujacharya actually did the job. Jamanacharya planted the seed, and Ramanujacharya defeated Kevala Dvaitavad of Shankaracharya, and re-established Vishishtadvaitavada, the philosophy of Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya was the person who continued the mission of Jamunacharya. Just as in our movement, in Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya, in the recent past, Bhakti Vinod Thakur planted the seed and created the field, and then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur did the work of spreading Krishna consciousness. Similarly, Jamunacharya created the field and planted the seed to defeat Kevaladvaitavad and then establish Vishishtadvaitavad. And Ramanujacharya actually did the job. So, in this way we can see that how in India the great personalities always took shelter of Bhagavad Gita and all led their lives according to the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. The saintly people always carry a Bhagavad Gita with them. And whenever they have time, they just read Bhagavad Gita. So this way, just by understanding the instructions of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, our life, or rather we can make our lives very sublime. We can make our lives very joyful. But we have to follow the process. The instructions that Krishna gave in Bhagavad Gita is so profound, but at the same time so easy to perform. Actually, the final instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. Give up all your nonsense and just surrender unto me. Now, is it difficult? No, it shouldn't be difficult. But the difficulty is that we can't give up our nonsense. Because we can't give up our nonsense, that's why you can't surrender to Krishna. And all our nonsense is trying to enjoy this material nature. But when we are able to give up all our desire to enjoy this material nature and surrender unto Krishna, then Krishna takes care of us. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo mokshayishyami maasya. Krishna gave us the assurance, I will deliver you from all your sinful reactions and don't worry about it. And as I mentioned, like passion and ignorance is always very distressful. And it breeds violence, it causes disturbance to all the people around us when we act in a passionate or ignorant way. But when we act in a mode of goodness, then not only benefits us, it benefits also the people, those who are around us. So this way, the wisest thing to do is to follow the instructions of the scriptures and lead our lives accordingly. And we, as I was mentioning, like if we just stay in ISKCON and continue the regular process that Srila Prabhupada has given, then consciously or unconsciously, whether we know it or not, we will be acting in the mode of goodness. And what is the result of the mode of goodness? Result of the mode of goodness is spiritual elevation. Unless and until one becomes situated in the mode of goodness, one can't make spiritual progress. One can't become a devotee unless and until one is situated in the mode of goodness. Tada rajas tamo bhava kamo lobho dayaschaji cheto etoi rana vidhang. The mode of passion and ignorance simply breeds lust, greed, anger, etc. Kama lobha dayaschati. But cheto etoi ranabiddhang. But our consciousness becomes
purified or unaffected by the contamination of the material nature, when one becomes situated in the mode of goodness. And what happens in the mode of goodness? Evaṁ prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogata bhagavat tattva vijñānaṁ mukta saṅgaśya jāyate. When one becomes situated in the mode of goodness, then evaṁ prasanna manaso, his consciousness becomes very tranquil and he becomes very satisfied. Bhagavad bhakti yogata, by being engaged in devotional service. And by bhagavat tattva vijñānaṁ, understanding or realizing the truth about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, mukta saṅgaśya jāyate, one becomes free from the material bondage. So in this way, very easily we can make spiritual advancement just by following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, or in plain and simple word, just by being in ISKCON. If we just remain in ISKCON, we will achieve the highest spiritual benefit. That is the advantage of being in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness that has been established by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It doesn't matter from what background we came from, it doesn't matter who we are, it doesn't matter whether we have fallen or elevated in the past, if we just remain in ISKCON, then we will make spiritual advancement. But if we give up the shelter of ISKCON, go away, then what happens? In a very short time, we deviate from Krishna consciousness. I've seen when people, we deviate from Krishna consciousness. I've seen when people give, when devotees give up Krishna consciousness and leave ISKCON, they immediately become very, very miserable again, falling down into the deepest region of ignorance. So, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Now this love does not mean love for Krishna. This love means love or hatred is indicating for that particular action. Meaning whether we like to do it or don't like to do it, we should do it. Because we have been instructed to do it by our authority. Like one loves to eat prasadam, but one hates to clean the pot. Right? So, that consideration should not be there. That I love to eat prasad, so I'll always eat prasad, and I hate to clean pots, so I'll never clean pots. In the mode of goodness, he will just do whatever the authority asks him to do. And by acting accordingly, he will make spiritual progress. He'll make advancement. Yes. Material happiness means cessation of pain, right? Living entities are in a painful state, and when the pain is reduced to some extent, he thinks he is happy. That is what material happiness is. But the spiritual happiness is not relative to pain, but spiritual happiness is the real happiness or bliss.
Spiritual happiness is not described as a happiness as such, it is described as bliss. In Sanskrit, happiness, the word for happiness is sukh, sukham. But spiritual happiness is called anandam. There is a difference between ananda and sukh. Sukh is relative to the senses, but ananda is spiritual. And a devotee, how does a devotee discriminate between these two? Like, devotee has to see whether it is for his sense gratification or whether it's for Krishna's pleasure. So when it's for our sense gratification, then those activities are material. But when it is for Krishna's pleasure, then it is spiritual. And out of material, in the material plane, when the activities fulfill our desires, activities that fulfill our desires, those activities are called sukh. And when our desires are thwarted, then it is called dukkha, pain, sadness, misery. But when you give pleasure to Krishna's senses, then automatically we become happy, we become joyful. So that is the spiritual happiness. Not necessarily. Because if you become too attached to your material happiness, then we will, that then our own happiness, our own enjoyment will become the primary consideration. And we may not care for what Krishna wants, how to give pleasure to Krishna. But also it is said that at a neophyte stage, Krishna fulfills the desires of a devotee to make him fixed up. But then when he becomes fixed up, then Krishna does not fulfill his material desires. Because Krishna knows that too much attachment to material nature will be detrimental to spiritual advancement. That's why Krishna says, upon whom I bestow my mercy, I steal everything away from him. Jashaham anugrinhami harishe tadhanam shanam. Yeah, Haridas and then Sakita. Actually, when one works very hard, then he sleeps very well and he gets up early in the morning. Actually, people don't sleep more because of hard work, but people sleep more because of excessive eating. So, hard work shouldn't be given up. But excessive eating should be given up if one wants to get up early. Right? You work very hard, you'll see, you know, you wake up after 3-4 hours sleep and you feel fresh. No, I didn't get the question.
Could you give some example for a new devotee? How you can develop this quality of goodness? Because one can always perform daily activities in the moment with much chanting and passion.
How to give it up?
how to develop the mode of goodness. Yeah, right. How to come to the mode of platform of mode of goodness. As I said, like, the main criterion for working in the mode of goodness is acting according to the scriptural injunction. You see, when we act because, you know, the scripture said it, why do we get up at so early in the morning? Because scripture says that one must get up early in the morning. Why do we worship the deities? Because scripture says it. So this way, by following the instruction of the scriptures, even though in the beginning he may not be conscious about it, but gradually he will become conscious. And there is no way of knowing, because the devotee is a washing pot, that doesn't mean he is in a mode of ignorance. Actually, everyone who joins ISKCON, we have to understand that he has transcended the modes of ignorance and passion. I mean, those who have joined selflessly for the sake of, you know, making spiritual advancement, the motivation is in the mode of goodness. So, and then they are acting according to the instructions of the authority. Then that is even beyond goodness. Acting according to the instructions of the authorities for the sake of giving pleasure to Krishna, that is even beyond the mode of goodness. So what is beyond mode of goodness? Do you know? Pure goodness, very good. Suddha sattva. Because this goodness also is in a material nature. But when one transcends, and this goodness is not pure, because there is some tinge of passion and ignorance in that goodness. But when one transcends the material nature completely, then he becomes situated in sattvang vishuddham, pure goodness, suddha sattva. The devotees are actually aspiring to become situated in the suddha sattva. Or it won't be also exaggeration to say that the devotees are situated in the suddha sattva. Minimizing what? Oh, I see. Well, you see, prasad is transcendental. So whether you take it with appreciation or without appreciation, it will work on you. Just as a medicine, you take the medicine knowingly or unknowingly, it will cure your disease. Similarly, Krishna prasad, if we take it knowingly or consciously or unconsciously about its spiritual potency, it will work on us and we'll become cured of our material disease. Therefore, in the beginning we tell the devotees to take a lot of prasad. When someone joins, we feed him up to his neck. And the prasad will work. And it's by taking prasad that one actually conquers his other senses. The other senses are very strong, but Krishna prasad, but of all the senses, tongue is the strongest. Tar madhye jivbhavati lobhamoy shudurmati. The tongue of all the senses is very lusty and it is shudurmati. It is very wicked also. But in order to conquer this tongue, Krishna prasad. And when one takes Krishna prasad, then the tongue is specified, or tongue comes down. And when the tongue is satisfied, then all the other senses are also satisfied. So Krishna consciousness is a very scientific process. If one follows the process, he will derive the benefit. Any other question? Mishra bhakti literally means mixed devotion. And mixed with what? Mixed with the mixed with karma and mixed with jnana. Mixed with a desire for fruitive, mixed with fruitive desire, that is called karma mishra bhakti. One is rendering devotional service, bhakti. But why he is doing it? Because he wants some fruitive result. He is rendering devotional service so that he will get some material benefit. So that is called karma mishra. And then, when one renders devotional service to attain liberation, that is called Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Devotional service mixed with knowledge. But when devotional service is rendered without any contamination of, without any contamination of fruitive result or desire for liberation, that is called Siddha Bhakti. Anna Bhilashita Shunnam. The definition of Siddha Bhakti is Anna Bhilashita Shunnam. Free from any other desire than serving Krishna. No other desire but to serve Krishna, but to please Krishna. Anna Bhilashita Shunnam. Jnana karmad anabritam. Free from the mixture or contamination or covering of fruitive activities and desire for liberation. Anukullena krishnanu shilanam bhakti uttama. When one renders service or when one accepts whatever is favorable to Krishna, when he acts to just give pleasure to Krishna, then that is called uttam. Okay, Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.